following is a presentation of Emmanuel Covenant Church, located in South Surrey, British Columbia. To learn more, please visit us online at emmanuelcovenant.ca.
It is with great pleasure that we are blessed to have a guest speaker with us today, and most of you know this familiar face, and this is Tim Fredheim that is with us. He is a longtime friend of Emmanuel Church and a member at Green Timbers Covenant in North Surrey, and we look forward to hearing what God has to say through you today for us. Thank you.
Thank you, Sharon. It is great to be here at Emmanuel this morning. You know, I jokingly told Rich and Sharon I was really annoyed when you hired an assistant minister a few years back, because I said to Marcia, well, there goes my preaching down at Emmanuel. And Marcia asked to be greeted to you guys today. And I was telling Rich that I can't quite remember how many, I can't remember a lot of things these days, but it's about 3 or 4 years ago. It was after Bruce and before Keith, that we spent about 3 or 4 months. And I was telling Rich that for Marcia, that was a very special time. And it was a bit of an oasis for her in a desert. And so she always thinks very fondly, and we still have that glass, whatever you call these things, that said, thank you for coming to Emmanuel. And that occupies a space in our living room, because for her it was very, it's a very pleasant memory. And I have to say that the church is decorated so beautifully. My goodness. Yes. And I want to congratulate Emmanuel on having the youngest guitar player on a worship team. That excites me. Very good. So if you have your Bibles, turn to the book of Ezekiel. Ezekiel. And buckle up. Ezekiel chapter 34. The word of the Lord came to me, Son of man, prophesy against the shepherds of Israel. Prophesy and say to them, this is what the sovereign Lord says. Woe to the shepherds of Israel who only take care of themselves. Should not shepherds take care of the flock? You eat the curds, clothe yourself with the wool, and slaughter the choice animals. But you do not take care of the flock. You've not strengthened the weak or healed the sick or bound up the injured. You have not brought back the strays or searched for the lost. You've ruled them harshly and brutally. So they were scattered because there was no shepherd. And when they were scattered, they became food for all the wild animals. My sheep wandered over all the mountains and on every high hill. They were scattered over the whole earth, and no one searched or looked for them. Therefore, you shepherds, hear the word of the Lord. As surely as I live, declares the sovereign Lord, because my flock lacks a shepherd, and so has been plundered and become food for all the wild animals, and because my shepherds did not search for my flock, but cared for themselves rather than for my flock, therefore, O shepherds, hear the word of the Lord. This is what the sovereign Lord says, I am against the shepherds and will hold them accountable for my flock. I will remove them from tending the flock so that the shepherds can no longer feed themselves. I will rescue my flock from their mouths, and it will no longer be food for them. For this is what the sovereign Lord says, I myself will search for my sheep and look after them. As a shepherd looks after his scattered flock when he is with them, so will I look after my sheep. I will rescue them from all the places where they were scattered on a day of clouds and darkness. I will bring them into their own land. I will pasture them on the mountains of Israel, in the ravines and in all the settlements of the land. I will tend them in a good pasture, and the mountain heights of Israel will be their grazing land. There they will lie down in good grazing land, and there they will feed in a rich pasture on the mountains of Israel. I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord. I will search for the lost and bring back the strays. I will bind up the injured and strengthen the weak. But the sleek and the strong I will destroy. I will shepherd the flock with justice. As for you, my flock, this is what the sovereign Lord says. I will judge between one sheep and another, and between rams and goats. Is it not enough for you to feed on good pasture? Must you also trample the rest of your pasture with your feet? Is it not enough for you to drink clear water? Must you also muddy the rest with your feet? Must my flock feed on what you have trampled and drink what you have muddied with your feet? Therefore, this is what the sovereign Lord says to them. See, I myself will judge between the fat sheep and the lean sheep. Because you shove with flank and shoulder, butting all the weak sheep with your horns until you've driven them away, I will save my flock, and they will no longer be plundered. I will judge between one sheep and another. I will place over them one shepherd, my servant David, and he will tend them. He will tend them and be their shepherd. I, the Lord, will be their God, and my servant David will be prince among them. I, the Lord, have spoken. Life has its peculiarities. You prepare. You make wise decisions. And then suddenly, your life is struck by an outside force, and everything is changed. Yesterday at work, my pianist for chapel came and said to me, I forgot the music. I was a bit stunned. How does a person who's contracted to play the piano for a service forget the music? But it was a crazy day, and I just used my guitar. And so as we walked out, I said to her, I just have to ask you, how do you forget to bring your music? And then she just looked at me and she said, it's been a crazy day. Ray, her husband, she said, 2 days ago decided to put the lights up on the house, and he was going to put the star up on the roof, and he put a ladder up and didn't ask anybody to hold the ladder. And the ladder just slipped right out because of the wet weather. And she said the only thing that really saved Ray was the fact that the ladder just slid like this, and he kind of slid down the ladder. She said his head missed the cement step by inches, but she said his shoulder is broken in 4 places, and he had emergency surgery, and I'm on my way over there right now. I just said, oh, I totally understand. And then she kept talking to me, and she says, you know, I love Ray. I love him, but he does things that are just so, why, you know. To compound, she says, Ray hasn't worked, you know, steady for over a year. He did this at home. We have no money. She says, my income is not going to pay for the mortgage on the house. She says, I really don't know what we're going to do. Do we say life has its peculiarities? Well, whatever they are, they do happen. And they just happen. Well, such was the case with Ezekiel as well. Ezekiel was born into a priestly family, given a very good upbringing, I'm sure, very well educated, had all the advantages, really, of being a Jew in the year 620 BC. And at the age of 25, he was married, and he was preparing to take on his duties in the temple. But then his life was totally disrupted by a foolish decision made by the king of Judah. He rebelled against the king of Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar. And very quickly, Nebuchadnezzar had his armies surrounding Jerusalem, putting up a siege works and preparing for the worst. The king actually died rather suddenly. We don't know how, whether it was somebody who poisoned him or whatever, we don't know. But then his son took over, and within 3 months, his son, looking out and knowing what's going to happen, surrendered. And apparently Nebuchadnezzar, because the son surrendered, he allowed the city and the temple to remain standing. But 10,000 citizens, including Ezekiel and all the priestly members of the priesthood, were marched off to Babylon. And there they were given kind of a suburb, and Nebuchadnezzar gave them the basic rights and privileges of Babylonian citizens, which is a way of saying, here's your new home. You're going to be here for a while, so settle in. Well, Ezekiel, right on the edge, right on the cusp of entering into the prime of life for himself, suddenly found himself homeless, jobless, and theologically confused. Now, 5 years later, and he gives a specific date in chapter 1, he would be 30 years old on his birthday, and don't ask me how these things figure out, but the guys who write books tell you that he was 30 years old. It would have been the time, it would have been the day that he would have become like a big priest in the temple. But instead, in chapter 1, we read that he went down to the Kibar River, and sitting there by himself, he suddenly looked up in the sky, and he sees a thundercloud rolling across. Only there was light all around the cloud, and as the cloud got closer, he saw the wheels and images in them. And as he stared and thought about this, he realized that the glory of God was being revealed to him at that moment. Ezekiel is transformed by the experience. He receives a call to become a prophet to the people in exile. And given his training and his spiritual experience, he's a very good person to have. He preaches and teaches in a no-punches-pulled style. Did you kind of notice that when I was reading this? You know, I'm this, I'm that, and, you know. Yeah, this was not a sugar-coated message that he brought. He lays the blame for their current situation on the government. That is, the kings that allowed idolatry to flourish, as well as citizens who went along with it. He also, though, preached about a renewal of God's covenant. Today, our text is about that renewal, that hope that God will act on their behalf, though couched in the language of tough love. Chapter 34, which I just read, begins with a direct blast against the kings of Israel. Prophesy and say to them, even to the shepherds, I am against the shepherds. You may notice that Ezekiel uses the word shepherd instead of king. It doesn't really grab us at first, because we think of a shepherd as always somebody who's tending sheep, but in the culture surrounding Israel, as well as Israel, it was commonplace to call a king the shepherd. Maybe it was like, he is the shepherd. And the king, or shall I just say, the shepherd, was to tend the flock, that is, the citizens. The shepherd was supposed to maintain justice and look after the people. Now, Trent, what's the most familiar expression that we know about that in the Old Testament, in the book of Psalms? Any idea? The Lord is my shepherd. Yes. You might say, the Lord is my king. The Lord is my shepherd, the one who leads me. He takes care of me. And so Ezekiel begins, "Woe to you, shepherds of Israel, who only take care of yourselves." In verse 4, he criticizes them for failing to provide the proper care for the flock. "You've not strengthened the weak, or healed the sick, or bound up the injured. You've not brought back the strays, or searched for the lost. You've used them harshly and brutally." Samuel Adams is a person that I read some of his comments about this, and he says that in a seemingly hopeless situation like this displacement that the Jewish people were experiencing, God intervenes and takes over the shepherding duties. Read kingship. God takes over. While Ezekiel pulls no punches in his withering indictments, he also speaks of forgiveness and restoration. His larger purpose in chapter 34 is to explain that salvation, a return from the exile, is available through Yahweh, the shepherd. This God declares that, "I will seek out my sheep. I will rescue them." Ezekiel wants to convince the exiles that God has not abandoned them. God will take over from the disgraced and exiled kings who failed in their duties as shepherds of the flock. Well, that's the introduction. This brings us to our text for today, beginning at verse 11. And here we find that the shepherd has three basic tasks that he needs to do. One, find the lost sheep and bring them back. Two, care for and heal the injured sheep. And finally, administer justice to the flock. It's a little bumpy today, by the way, so you got to hang in there with me. Ezekiel, I told you, he pulled no punches, so I'm going to try to explain it to you like he said it too, so you might get a few ruffled feathers in there. So here's the first task. "For thus says the Lord God, I myself will search for my sheep and seek them out. As shepherds seek out their flocks when they are among their scattered sheep, so I will seek out my sheep. I will rescue them from the places to which they have been scattered on a day of clouds and thick darkness." So I just call your attention to that last phrase. The sheep have been scattered on a day of clouds and darkness, and thick darkness. Any idea what that might be referring to? Well, 10 years after the first exile, Nebuchadnezzar returned to Jerusalem for a second time, and he leveled the city and the temple. It was left burning. So my thought is simply that what God is saying is that the sheep that were scattered are scattered on a day of clouds and thick darkness. And you can imagine just seeing smoke and fire all coming out and sheep being scattered. That is to say, people who anybody left would be leaving the city, fleeing the exile. It's a picture of the destruction of Jerusalem. But notice what Ezekiel tells the people, that God says, I myself, God will take on this assignment. And God's first task is to find the lost sheep of Israel. This is a word to the people who are in exile. God has not abandoned you. He's looking for you. You will see pretty quickly that the words of Ezekiel in chapter 34 are also a mandate that Jesus uses in the gospel, in his own ministry. For I have come to seek and to save that which is lost. Now, Dennis, I got a call on you here. Seeking the lost, is that a phrase that we use very often anymore? I would agree with you. We don't use it too much anymore, do we? And it's coming from the pulpit today, Dennis. Well, interestingly enough, our culture doesn't like to be thought of as being lost. Rather, we like to say, I'm not lost, I'm spiritual, I'm just not religious. Or, we're not lost, we're engaged in self-discovery. I'm trying to find out what works best for myself. Now, I get confused sometimes about what people really mean. Are they this or are they that? You're this or that. But at the same time, I think we all meet people who get lostness and respond to it. One such person is Marianne Connor, who lives in Surrey. Marianne Connor had begun volunteering with homeless people. Just a few days or a little bit of time. But her main time was spent. She had a very profitable real estate business and a marketing and interior design company in Vancouver. Her business was on the verge of breaking through into the lucrative American market, something that she never dreamed could happen. But then she walked away from it all, her business and her finances. I knew God was calling me, she said. It was January 2004. Vancouver was hit with record cold and snowfall. The homeless were in crisis in a dramatic way. Connor persuaded Gentle Shepherd Church in Wally to throw open its doors to shelter people from the biting cold. 35 people slept inside. The city turned a blind eye to zoning issues for a month. Connor's involvement as an organizer and leader increased. By the spring, she shut down her business to focus more fully on what soon became a nightly outing to the streets of Wally. People in up to 10 diverse Surrey churches volunteered their time, and Night Shift Ministries was born. Today, Night Shift operates multiple ministries, though their primary one is still to feed the hungry. Hers is a response to the heartbeat of God, who wants to find those who are lost. The second task comes beginning at verse 16. I will seek the lost, and I will bring back the strayed, and I will bind up the injured, and I will strengthen the weak. This is the pastoral task of caring. And verse 16, you should kind of, if you've got your arrows or whatever, it points back to verse 4. Because what the shepherds failed to do in verse 4, now the shepherd will do in verse 16. Christopher Wright, whose book I have right here, he notes that grammatically, these verses place the objects before the verb. So if you were to translate it literally, I guess it would be something like, the lost I will seek, the strayed I will bring back. The emphasis falls on the shepherd. And the shepherd's role is to provide protection and pasture for his flock. Would it surprise you to think that Jesus himself used these verses to describe his own ministry? John 10, I am the good shepherd. My sheep hear my voice, and they come to me. Jesus used this analogy in his parable when he talked about, well, a shepherd leaves his 99 to go after the one and to bring him back. Jesus' ministry was characterized by healing, by caring for those who were weak. Jesus lived out the true shepherd's mandate. And I think it's safe to say that this particular issue is what's closest to our hearts when we think of what it means to shepherd people. We think about that task of bringing healing to those who are around us. The third task gets a little bumpy, though, because the shepherd's job is also to bring justice to the flock. Now, you wouldn't think that a shepherd has to bring justice to a flock, would you? You think that the flock just take care of themselves. But when you start to read the words that he's talking about here, you realize it doesn't just happen. In verses 17 to 22, we hear Ezekiel blasting the citizens of Jerusalem who have acted selfishly on their own behalf. Is it not enough for you to feed on the good pasture that you must tread down the rest of the pasture with your feet and muddy the rest of the water with your feet? Thus saith the Lord, I myself will judge between the fat sheep and the lean sheep. I was surprised when I was reading this. I went, wait a minute. You're not supposed to judge the sheep, are you? And then the fat and the lean? I thought it would be more like you're going to help the lean guys get fatter or something. But no, I'm going to judge between the fat sheep and the lean sheep. But Ezekiel isn't talking about animals. He's talking about the Jewish society. He's pointing at a society that discriminated against the poor and the weak, leaving the nation open to corruption and neglect. The people listening to Ezekiel didn't have to look far to realize that they had played a part in their own disaster. But like all of us, we tend to say, what, me? I'm just a good businessman. I'm just doing what my dad taught me how to make a dollar. Behold, I myself will judge between the fat sheep and the lean sheep. And this, you have to underline, go home, draw a picture, find something. But you guys who have been on a farm, tell me if I'm not right or wrong on this, but this is a picture. Because you push with your side and shoulder and thrust away at all the weak with your horns till you've scattered them abroad. Have you ever seen animals do that? They're coming up to the trough. The big guys, it says their sides and their shoulders. I was looking at pictures of sheep. You know, the big ones come up like this, and the little guys are trying to get in the trough, and the big guys are going like, yeah. They're just pushing people out of the way. And you know, sheep actually have horns. So then if one guy actually gets in there, get him out of there. It's quite amazing, actually. I've had a little bit of experience once or twice with a cow. Cows can push me out of the way anytime they want to. They're very strong. Well, who are the fat and who are the lean in our society? Who are the ones who push other people out of the way? This is where it gets political. Whoa. This is why you can say something if you only come once every 3 years. Hopefully they'll forget by the time you might come back. Well, a society that had neglected the poor. You see, these people weren't dumb. They had the Torah. They had the law. They understood the law. They simply disregarded it in favor of their own interests. However, Ezekiel points out to them, he knew the law. And he said, look, God's bias is with the poor. You who are strong, you can take care of yourself, but it's the weak and the injured. That's whose God's bias lies with. Now, as I was thinking about this passage, and, you know, I'm not very political in many ways. I'm not. But I was wondering, what's an illustration about what this might be? And what came to mind was a situation in Abbotsford about a year ago. They had a tent city in Abbotsford at a place called Jubilee Park, across the street, apparently, from the Salvation Army. And it made news for several reasons, but one of which was that they accused the city or city workers of dumping chicken manure all around the tents, trying to drive the people away. Then other people came forward. Campers alleged that the police had used knives to slash their tents and destroy property. Now, as I reread the articles online, I was more interested actually in the comments below the articles to see what was the response to this. Here are some of the comments. I wish the government would find me adequate housing. Let them get a job and work for a change. Well, if they'd quit smoking dope, maybe they might do something with their lives, and so on. Not much compassion there. People were angry. They had been kind enough, they thought, giving a few bucks at Christmas to the Sally Ann. And people at City Hall had had enough as well. We need to get rid of these people. They don't belong in a park. Where's the provincial government to help us with funding? Well, I can appreciate the anger of the citizens. Because in one of the articles I read, a woman who lived next door to the camp talked about the campers camping on her front lawn, using it as a bathroom. Oh, poor people aren't necessarily saintly. They seem to be just like the fat sheep pushing people out of their way. It's a complex, that's my favorite answer. It's complex. It's not easy to answer. However, Ezekiel still says, God will judge between the fat sheep and the lean sheep, and his bias is with Tent City. Now, Ezekiel lived some 600 years before the time of Christ. The vision that he had there on his 30th birthday transformed his life. And apparently Ezekiel spent the next 25 years of his life ministering to the people in their community. They didn't go back to Jerusalem. They didn't resume the old life. But he preached, and what we were reading today are some of the messages that were given to the people who were in exile. But then Ezekiel died. He died without knowing what really happened. He didn't know that about 100 years later, a group of these people went back to Jerusalem. They went back and began to reorganize their lives. They kept his words, though, and they would read them. And as I thought about that, I was reminded that today, the first Sunday of Advent, we're waiting for a king. As Christians, we're celebrating the coming of Jesus and celebrating that. And I'm reminded that there was another man, a Jewish man, who at the age of approximately 30 also went to a river and had a vision himself, where he heard God say, "This is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased." And this man lived out his life in ministry to people. And in John 10, I want to go back there because that's where we read these words where Jesus says, "I am the good shepherd." Now, I always think a sermon is great if I learn something from it. Whether anybody else does or not, I hope you do. But I had a whole new meaning to John 10 today. I've always seen John 10 in terms of I'm the good shepherd, and there's a picture of Jesus with a lamb on his shoulder. But I want to read to you what Mr. Wright says about this passage. He says, let me go back here. It's worth observing that the circle of ideas that Ezekiel, speaking the word of God to these people, what he calls circle of ideas that surrounds the metaphor of shepherding the flock, that's what comes to mind when we hear Jesus make his stunning claim, "I am the good shepherd." He says, unfortunately, his saying has been colored for many Christian readers by a combination of a rather sentimental reading of the individual piety of Psalm 23 and the plethora of Christian paintings of Jesus cuddling a little lamb or carrying one on tender shoulders. But Jesus' claim in John 10 was certainly not merely that he could be nice to poor, lost lambs. That was not a claim likely to lead to argument and a charge of demon possession. No. He was standing astride that great vision of Ezekiel. Israel was like a flock of sheep without a shepherd. That is, they had no true king. And he says a dangerous thing to say with the Herods in power. Furthermore, those who were now ruling them were thieves and robbers, just like the rogue shepherds in Ezekiel's indictment. Again, a dangerous charge to make in such company. And against all such impostors, Jesus calmly makes the claim that he is precisely the true shepherd of whom Ezekiel prophesied, the true heir of Israel's ideal, the one who had said, "I myself will shepherd the flock." And who was that? None other than Yahweh, the Lord God himself. Jesus' claim was massive, to be the true king of Israel. And he adds, he said, it's not surprising that shortly afterwards, when Jesus repeated the claim, the argument turned to anger, and the stones that would execute a blasphemer were already in the hands of his opponent. Ezekiel's vision that Jesus meditated on and said, "I am that good shepherd. I am the true shepherd of the flock." Now, on this first Sunday in Advent, what vision is transforming your life? What is it that's causing you to see God anew in this season? We believe that Jesus has come. We believe he's the king. We believe he's the shepherd. Are you transformed by the call to seek out the lost? Are you transformed or changed in some way to become pastoral and care for the injured and bind up the flock? Does the call to bring justice to the flock ring with you. You see, that's really what Ezekiel is about. This kind of life-changing vision is not to make us into individuals who can go home and say it was a good sermon, but it's to say this is a call to action. This is what God expects of us to live in our world. It's not the exception, it's the rule. Well, as we look ahead to the coming of the King again, we celebrate. But we celebrate with humility because we realize this is a task that needs a vision much broader than our own. May God bless you here at Emmanuel and bring to you the strength and the willingness to take on that task and to continue it. Amen.
This has been a presentation of Emmanuel Covenant Church, located in South Surrey, British Columbia. To learn more, please visit us online at emmanuelcovenant.ca.